स्त्री शूद्र द्विज बंधुना त्रयीना श्रुति गोचरा कर्म श्रेयसे मूढ़ाना श्रेय एवं भवेदिहा इति भारतम अख्यानम् कृपया मुनिना कृतम्। ट्रांसलेशन एंड पर्पोर्ट बाय हिज डिवाइन ग्रेस एसी भक्तिवेदांत स्वामी श्रील प्रभुपाद। आउट ऑफ कंपैशन द ग्रेट सेज थॉट इट वाइज दैट दिस वुड इनेबल मेन टू अचीव द अल्टीमेट गोल ऑफ लाइफ। Thus he compiled the great historical narration called the Mahabharata for women, laborers and friends of the twice born. Purport. The friends of the twice born families are those who are born in the families of the Brahmanas, Kshatriyas and Vaishyas, or the spiritually cultured families, but who themselves are not equal to their forefathers. Such descendants are not recognized as such for want of purificatory achievements. The purificatory activities begin even before the birth of a child, and the seed giving reformatory process is called Garbhadhan Samskar. One who has not undergone such Garbhadhan Samskar or spiritual family planning is not accepted as being of an actual twice born family. The Garbhadhan Samskar is followed by other purificatory processes, out of which the sacred thread ceremony is one. This is performed at the time of spiritual initiation. After this particular samskar, one is rightly called twice born. One birth is calculated during the seed giving samskar, and the second birth is calculated at the time of spiritual initiation. One who has been able to undergo such important samskaras can call a bona fide twice born. If the father and mother do not undertake the process of spiritual family planning and simply beget children out of passion only, their children are called dvijabandhus. These dvijabandhus are certainly not as intelligent as the children of the regular twice-born families. The dvijabandhus are classified with the shudras and the women class, who are by nature less intelligent. The shudras and the women class do not have to undergo any samskaras, save and except the ceremony of marriage. The less intelligent classes of men, namely women, shudras and unqualified sons of the higher caste, are devoid of necessary qualifications to understand the purpose of the transcendental Vedas. For them the Mahabharata was prepared. The purpose of the Mahabharata is to administer the purpose of the Vedas. And therefore, within this Mahabharata, the summary of Veda or Bhagavad Gita is placed. The less intelligent are more interested in stories than in philosophy. And therefore the philosophy of the Vedas in the form of Bhagavad Gita is spoken by Lord Sri Krishna. Vasudeva and Lord Krishna are both on the transcendental plane, and therefore they collaborated in doing good to the fallen souls of this age. In the Bhagavad Gita is the essence of all Vedic knowledge. It is the first book of spiritual values, as the Upanishads are. The Vedanta philosophy is the subject matter for study by the spiritual graduates. Only the postgraduate spiritual student can enter into the spiritual or devotional service of the Lord. It is a great science, and the great professor is the Lord himself in the form of Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And the persons who are empowered by him can initiate others in the transcendental loving service of the Lord. It's a very important verse wherein Suta Goswami, even though makes a discrimination who is fallen, but in conclusion everyone in this age of Kali is fallen. And unless one recognizes this fact, until then one does not become desperate to beg for Krishna's mercy. And therefore, as Prabhupada explains, that once we recognize that we are fallen, and then we have the professor in the form of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Therefore, in the Mahabharata, other than the story, there is also this principle of culture. And when we read those cultural aspects of Mahabharata, it makes really feel yourself that you are so fallen in this age of Kali. Sometimes there is a dispute amongst people. No, one is not less intelligent. Who is less intelligent? But if you fail, like in India, there is aggregate. Unless you get 35% out of 100 marks, you are considered as failure. So there is no point in arguing about failed student. If you receive 30 or 15, doesn't make any difference because both are failed. If the person has received 30 marks, if he starts arguing that I am better, then he is not qualified to go to the higher class. What to speak of that? Even 35% if you pass, you don't go to any other good institution. They require some special grace of the teacher or the professor. So therefore, understanding how fallen we are, it makes one desperate to take the mercy of Lord Chaitanya. When we consider we are qualified, then we are kept away from the mercy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So therefore, that is the perception one has to see while reading this historical literature. Unless one reads these books through the eyes of Srimad Bhagavatam or the commentaries of Srila Prabhupada or his understanding, one becomes confused. Mahabharata, which was meant for the less intelligent class of people, the Shudras and the women, and by reading this book, all this class of people, they simply condemn the whole culture of the Mahabharata, unfortunately. Just like today, I was thinking about discussing Ekalavya's story. The story of Ekalavya is also very interesting. As I was explaining yesterday, there are many groups who claim that just because he was not born in the Kshatriya family, Drona and Arjun, they behaved unjustly with him. He was so powerful that Arjuna asked for his thumb. In this way, he exhibited his envy. That is the regular story which is prevalent all over India. But then again, if you see from the scriptural point of view, there is an elaborate explanation given by Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur and also Shripad Madhvacharya in Mahabharata Tatparya Niranay gives very lucid explanation which clarifies all the doubts in regards to Dronacharya's behavior and Arjuna's behavior towards Ekalavya. If you see from the Vedic cultural point of view, it is not important your proficiency in learning. In Kali Yuga, one only sees how intelligent you are in grasping the knowledge. Your expertise are recognized and you are allowed admission. But that was not the system of Vedic education. The system of Vedic education was why you want to get educated. If you are not proficient, that doesn't matter, but your motivations were recognized and based upon that the education was given. Because unless one is raised in the guna and karma, only karma is not important, guna is also important. Therefore, the division of varna is based upon guna karma vibhagasha. Just like we see, sometimes the terrorists, they may be more expert in using weapons. But that doesn't show that they are good, just because they have the expertise. So similarly, the background of Ekalavya was, maybe it was true that he was better than Arjuna, better than many warriors. But what was the reason he wanted to learn the art of archery? And then again, in the Vedic culture, it was very rare that somebody born in the family which is beyond Varnashram. The history says, Mahabharata says, that Ekalavya was raised by one Nishada king. Nishada is beyond Varnashram system. Like in the second canto, Lord, the Bhagavatam explains, Kirata, Hunandra, Pulinda, Pulukasha, these are the aborigines beyond Varnashram Dharma. So Ekalavya was raised by Hayadhanu, born in a Nishada family. But somehow that he became very expert in learning archery. How is it possible? In the Mahabharata, in the beginning, there is the story of Shakuntala and Dushyanta. And in India, so many poets have written big, big stories on this. There are dramas, there were poems and movies based on this story. Very interesting love story. But there is much more to understand when we read from the point of view of culture. Dushyanta was the king. He was the ancestor of the Pandavas. And one time he was roaming in the forest trying to hunt the animals. And he became exhausted and he was looking for some shelter. And he saw this beautiful ashram of Kanva Muni. And because of that ashram, his Sattvaguna came in the forefront. And he came looking to take the blessings of Kanva Maharshi. And when he came to the ashram of Kanva Maharshi, he sees that Kanva Maharshi was not there. But instead, there was a beautiful Brahmani. She comes and greets him. She says, come please sit and take some water. And immediately Dushyanta becomes attracted by her. And very interesting, Dushyanta asks her, he said, how is it that I'm attracted to you? If you're a Brahmani and I'm a Kshatriya, there is no way I can be attracted to you. Because if a Kshatriya is attracted to a Brahmani, because Brahmani is much higher than a Kshatriya, that is a sin on the part of a Kshatriya. So why this attraction is there? There is something wrong here. And Dushyanta says, that means you are not a Brahmani, you have to be a Kshatriya. He has that full confidence that as the follower of Varnashram Dharma, he cannot make that mistake. He said, you tell me, what is your background? And Shakuntala actually expresses that she is not a Brahmani. She was the daughter of Vishwamitra Muni, who happened to be a Kshatriya. He wanted to become a Brahmana. And because he wanted to be a Brahmana, therefore he was performing tapasya. And Indra, as usual, became fearful and he sent his apsara in the form of Menaka. And by the combination of Menaka and Vishwamitra Muni, Shakuntala was born. Even though she was raised by Kanva Maharshi, she had that character of being a Kshatriya. And therefore, Dushyanta was attracted by her. And he was very confident. That was the culture. Like one brahmachari, he went to one sadhu in Vrindavan. And he asked this question. He said, Swamiji, why is that in this age of Kali, the apsaras don't come to disturb the sadhus? And that sadhu said, you fool, that in this age of Kali, we are attracted by even cats and dogs. We are attracted by rats and cockroaches. Why do you need the apsaras to come here? He said, that is the level of our ability to control the senses. So therefore, in the previous yuga, in the Varnashram system, it was not that the Shudras were not given facilities to study, but every Varna, person in everyone was completely satisfied performing his duties. The Kshatriyas was perfectly satisfied performing his duties. Brahmana was perfectly satisfied performing his duties. And Vaishya was completely satisfied performing his duties. And Shudras were also perfectly satisfied performing in their duties. And while performing their occupation perfectly, they would attract the attention of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Being satisfied in one's own occupation was a natural phenomena in that part of the culture. So how is that Ekalavya developed this character of being a Kshatriya? Madhvacharya quotes. He says Ekalavya was actually not born in a Nishada family. Vasudeva had a brother and his name was Devashrava. Vasudeva, Lord Krishna's father. He had a brother named Devashrava, and Devashrava had a wife, Kshatriya wife. Through her, Ekalavya was born. But some other from his very childhood, he lost his parents, he was taken away by this Nishada king. And because he was raised by the Nishada king, again, association gives you character. The karma was there, the inbuilt karma was there of a Kshatriya. Just like we see sometimes, musicians, when they are born musicians, they simply take the instruments and they start playing. Genius musicians in India, we have seen, playing very intricate instruments like Veena and Mridanga. Nobody teaches them, but it is there inbuilt. So the karma is there, but to develop how to utilize it, as yesterday Gaurang Prabhu explained very nicely, the facilities are there, but the false ego is the problem. So to eradicate that false ego, the Vedic culture also talks about the character. But unfortunately, because Ekalavya was raised by a Nishada, his association was very bad. And therefore, rather than using his expertise of Kshatriya valor for protecting others, he simply wanted to use it to protect his pack of dogs from the wild animals. That was the only reason why he wanted to become best archer. Just see. That he got education for what? Simply to act like cats and dogs. Therefore, in the Vedic system, it was not like that. So in Dronacharya, when Ekalavya, before he came to Dronacharya, Harivamsa explains that he approached certain pishachis, hobgoblins. He was so desperate to learn. And he learned certain archery from these hobgoblins and pishachis. Again, if you want to go to a teacher, now in present time, you don't care what kind of character your teacher has. As long as he gives the education, that's important. But we forget to recognize, along with the education comes also the character of the teacher. Because we are listening submissively. So in the previous time, when you approach a teacher, the teacher has to be qualified. Not only in regarding teaching, but also in his character. But Ekalavya was not interested in that. He learned from the hobgoblins and pishachis. Then eventually when he came to know that Dronacharya is the best teacher, he has learned the archery from Parshuram, he came looking for Dronacharya. And the Pandavas were learning during that period of time. And Mahabharata clearly explains, Dronacharya rejected Ekalavya not because he was born Shudra or lower than Shudra. Rather, Mahabharata says, the knowledgeable Dronacharya, he specifically avoided to teach the weaponry art to Ekalavya. And then Ekalavya left that place on his own. He imagined the statue of Dronacharya and he started learning. And one day, the story, as it is explained by the people, that one day the Pandavas were going in the forest along with Drona. And they saw one dog barking. And suddenly, when the dog was barking, they saw few arrows coming and straight entering into the mouth of the dog without causing any bleeding to that dog. Simply stopping the dog to bark. And Arjuna was quite amazed to see that. That was called a Shabdavedi. And they kept on going to that place where the arrows had come. And they found this Nishada boy, black colored, looking very fierce, having the statue of Drona. And they asked him, who did this? And he explained, I was the one. And the Mahabharata never mentions that Arjuna became envious. Arjuna started feeling that I'm inferior to Ekalavya. This is what this story is told regularly. Rather, Arjuna goes to Dronacharya and said, you know, how is that? He's a student of yours. So, can you explain to me clearly that you had promised me that you'll make me the best archer? Madhvacharya explained it was not that Arjuna was not best archer. He was already best archer. He knew all the art. But he had the reason to stop Eklavya. So, in Dronacharya, when he heard this story, he immediately summoned Eklavya to come to his ashram. He said, who taught you this? He said, my dear sir, you have taught me. You are my teacher. So if I am your teacher, Dronacharya explained, and the part of the system in education is that a student has to pay Guru Dakshina. Guru Dakshina means to give the fees of a teacher. So I want the fees from you. And this part of the story is very emotionally explained. That when it was asked from Eklavya, without hesitation, he said, ask me what should I offer you. And Dronacharya said, then you give me your right hand thumb. Because if you take somebody's right hand thumb, especially the archer, then the dexterity, that expertise is lost. And without hesitation, he cut off his thumb and he gave it to Dronacharya. He offered it. And people say, just see, Guru Bhakti was so great in Eklavya that he cut off his thumb and gave it to Dronacharya. Then our Acharya has explained that if he was really such a great Guru Bhakta, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he explains this point, and many devotees in ISKCON, you know, I was talking to Radhanath Swami Maharaj, he said, till I read the story of Eklavya, how he was not proper disciple from Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur's commentary, he said that story was always attractive to us. We didn't realize proper import. Therefore, you always need the acharyas to give proper explanation. So, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur explained that Eklavya was expressing the mass of Guru Bhakti. There was no real Guru Bhakti. And second, in the first place, even though Dronacharya told him that you cannot learn this, he disobeyed the instruction of his spiritual master. And then he considered the mundane morality higher. And then Saraswati Thakur says that he lacked that simple devotion. He was complicated. That simplicity was not there in Eklavya. And the worst offense he created was he wanted to be greater than a pure devotee Vaishnava. That he wanted to be better than Arjuna. That character was not appreciated by the Lord. And then he created an imaginary guru. That is the impersonal philosophy. And Arjuna, being a Vaishnava, had to stop it. Even though that means he would be condemned by the normal materialistic people as a person who is envious of Eklavya. So therefore, these are the commentary given by Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. And Shripad Madhvacharya explains, he says, not only Eklavya was raised by this Nishada, but unfortunately was also a demon called Maniman. And he was the head of the demons called as Krodavesha. It is there in the Mahabharata. These Krodavesha demons were killed by Lord Krishna. And Eklavya was killed by Lord Krishna out of the battlefield. Just like we were discussing the story of Drushtadyumna was killed by Ashwatthama, not like a Kshatriya. When Drushtadyumna was crying out, please kill me like a Kshatriya, don't strangulate me, give me the death of a Kshatriya. Similarly, it is explained that Lord Krishna took him out of the battlefield and then he killed him. So if he was really such a person who was pleasing to Lord, pleasing to a devotee, then why would Lord Krishna take him out of the battlefield and kill him? And who were the friends of Eklavya? When Jarasandha attacked Krishna, that time Eklavya came along with Jarasandha. It is explained in the Harivamsa. And Krishna and Balram chased him away. Pradyumna chased him away. But the second time again, when Lord Krishna kidnapped Rukmini, Rukmi sent his army. He also came to fight Krishna. That was the time Krishna killed Ekalavya out of the battlefield. Very briefly, Mahabharata explains that Krishna killed him out of the battlefield. That part is explained. But why Krishna and how he killed him, that is explained in Harivamsa. So therefore, the whole principle is not because he was Shudra or less than Shudra, therefore Lord Krishna killed him. But rather, the knowledge which he wanted to use was not meant for the protection of the people. Therefore, in the Vedic literature, in the Vedic Sanskrit, it is explained, even the Shastras are not supposed to be read by everybody. Especially the Vedic literatures which deal with the, we are not talking about devotional service, because devotional service is a universal principle. But the Vedic knowledge is not meant for everybody to read. Because if they read the Vedic knowledge wrongly and use it for the wrong purpose, Shastra and Shastra, they have the same utility. They can come to our aid, they help us, or if they are used wrongly, they can create greatest violence. Therefore, Lord Ramachandra also, yesterday I narrated that story, that there is a story that Lord Ramachandra killed a Shudra who was studying Vedas. Again, Madhvacharya explains, why did Lord Ramachandra kill a Shudra? And one Acharya gives the commentary, he says, if a criminal is a Shudra, and if you give him punishment, you can't blame the judge saying that, just see, you are being partial to the Shudra, you are not giving proper treatment to them. Just because they are downtrodden, therefore you are hurting them, harming them. No, judge will not make that discrimination. Whoever is a criminal, he has to punish. Like there was a big talk in India during the match fixing, the cricket match fixing, and they were doing all this inquiry, and one cricketer was caught with a big scandal, and he had links with the underground, and he happened to be from the, you know, minority community, and therefore he started using this card. Just because I'm a minority community, you are punishing me. And he tried to create that emotional support for himself. So this Acharya says, no, that is not right. Whoever is a criminal, either Brahmana, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra, it doesn't matter. Judge has the power to punish. So similarly, when Lord Ramachandra saw that the Shudra is reading Shastra, and what was the purpose? He had a wrong purpose. Ramayana explains that the Shudra wanted to acquire the position of Lord Shiva. Take on the position of Lord Shiva. And therefore, when Lord Rama saw that he's reading Shastra, becoming powerful by reading Shastra, therefore Lord Ram came and he killed him. Not because he was Shudra. So this concept can only be understood when we hear from proper source. And Madhvacharya explains that because Ekalavya exhibited some kind of morality, even as a devotee, if we are asked by our spiritual master something very, you know, very demanding, we hesitate to offer it. Even from that ground, his sacrifice is quite glorious. But what was the problem? The problem was, if he had continued to live like that, then would have caused great harm to the society. So Dronacharya appreciated that character. Okay, you have that character of offering something to me, but I have to minimize the harm created by you. So therefore, you give me your thumb. So he took that thumb from him. And eventually, after some years, Madhvacharya explains, quoting Harivamsa, he took him to Raivataka mountain. Dronacharya took him to Raivataka mountain and he taught him secret weaponries. But that learning was not as harmful as possessing the thumb and using the archery. Why? Because he saw that there is some tinge of morality in him. He minimized the harm which he would cause eventually. Therefore, the Kshatriyas were the only right people. Why? Because they always took the guidance of the Brahmanas. Like in India, when they have to give license for the weapons, every year you have to go to a psychiatrist. Why? Because when you use the weapon, when you have the weapon in your hand, it creates a desire to use it. Like there is a story in the Niti. One Kshatriya had to go to some place. And he kept his weapons with the Brahmana. And simply because the weapons were there in his house, the Brahmana started thinking. When he became contaminated by those weapons, he started thinking how to use them. And immediately called for the Kshatriya. He said, come on, take this away from me because of the association of these weapons, I am becoming violent in my nature. And therefore, just imagine when the Kshatriyas would have these powerful weapons, along with that, they were taught self-control by their teacher. They were always guided by the Brahmanas. Or else, they would misuse the weapons. They would hurt others. Therefore, in the Mahabharata, there is another story. This is between Ashwatthama and Arjuna. When the battle was over, Ashwatthama killed all the sons of the Pandavas. And then he released the Brahmastra at the Pandavas when Arjuna was fighting him. And because he released Brahmastra, Arjuna also released the Brahmastra. And if the two Brahmastras come together, the Shastra explains, for many years there will be drought and no water. The whole land becomes dry. And Vasudeva comes there. He says, come on, stop it. Both withdraw the Brahmastra. And Arjuna withdraws the Brahmastra, but Ashwatthama could not withdraw the Brahmastra. He said, I only know how to release it, but I do not know how to withdraw it. Then Ashwatthama, Vyasadeva chastised him. He said, why did you then release the Astra if you don't know how to withdraw it? He said, then direct it to some place. And that's how he directed that Astra in the womb of Uttara. And then Mahabharata explains why Arjuna had the power to withdraw the Astra. And why Ashwatthama had no power to withdraw the Astra. And it is explained because Arjuna was a Brahmachari and Ashwatthama had lost his Brahmacharya. If you read the history, Arjuna had three wives. And Ashwatthama was lifelong Brahmachari. So why Mahabharata says that he was Brahmachari, Arjuna was Brahmachari and Ashwatthama was not a Brahmachari? Madhvacharya gives the commentary. Again to show that who can possess the Shastra and Shastras? Unless you have a qualification, you cannot. Arjuna had the qualification, Ashwatthama had no qualification. He received that Brahmastra only because Dronacharya fell in the principle of having relationship as a father to his son. He had no qualification. He was not willing to give him that weapon. He said, you are not qualified to have it. But he insisted. And Dronacharya made this mistake of giving his son this Astra even though he was not qualified. And he knew that he will misuse it. And Madhvacharya explained what was the qualification of Arjuna. He was a Brahmachari. And he gives this story. When Arjuna had gone to the heavenly planets to meet with his father Indra. And then Arjuna was looking at this Apsara Urvashi and he was sitting with Indra on the same throne. He was constantly looking at Urvashi. And Indra saw that. And Indra felt, oh, Arjuna is interested in Urvashi. Then he called one of his friends. He said, today evening Arjuna, I saw that Arjuna is interested. He said, send Urvashi to Arjuna's place. And this friend of Indra comes to Urvashi, says, you know, Arjuna is very much attracted by you. Why don't you go and entertain him? So she comes, Urvashi comes to Arjuna's place. Then she comes to Arjuna and she says, I've come just to entertain you. Arjuna folds his hand. He said, come on. He said, I was only looking at you as my mother. He said, you used to be the wife of my ancestor, Pururava. So I was simply amazed to see the wife of my ancestor. So how can you be anything but my mother? And Urvashi became so disgusted and angry with Arjuna because in the heavenly planets, these principles don't work, as Gauri Prabhu was mentioning yesterday. They work on a different principles. It's all relative. And that was an insult for Urvashi. She was thinking many, many sages fell down. Big, big sages fell down simply by my presence. And this Kshatriya is not being attracted by me. She kept on insisting to Arjun. She gave all the moral principles of the heavenly planets. Arjuna said, no way. He said, you are my mother. I cannot think you anything except my mother. And it is explained. Mahabharata explains, simply by hearing the story of Arjuna's sense control, you can control over your senses. As a grahastha, having a three wives, and Urvashi had track record of making everybody flat, whichever sadhu she met or sages she met, and here a kshatriya was not willing to be attracted on the physical platform. That was his brahmacharya. And therefore had the power to withdraw. On the other hand, Ashwatthama was not brahmachari because Madhvacharya explains that when Duryodhana was about to die on the battlefield, just see the desire for Duryodhana to control the throne of Hastinapura was so great, he was about to die. He realized that all of my sons are dead, my brothers are dead, only the Pandavas are surviving. He gave this option to Ashwatthama. He said, my dear Ashwatthama, my wife is still surviving. Why don't you procreate children through my wife so that they can try getting the throne of Hastinapur? And Madhvacharya explains that at some point of time, Ashwatthama agreed to that proposal. So he fell down on a mental platform as a brahmachari. He said, that is the difference between Arjuna and Ashwatthama. Arjuna did not fall down on any platform. He was very clear in this regard. He practiced and therefore he had the qualification to invoke and utilize all the divine weapons. And that is how Vedic culture works. Unless you have that background of guna, you are not allowed to utilize the principle of karma. And the teacher would see that and the parents would see that. And in this way, the education was offered to them. There was no question of either you are born Brahmana, born Kshatriya, born Vaishya, born Shudra. But the basic principle was that the Brahmanas only attract that kind of living entities. A Kshatriya would only attract that kind of living entity. Vaishya would only attract that kind of living entity. And Shudras would attract that kind of living entity. Therefore, the whole structure was very, very harmonious in attaining the higher principles of life. So when we understand in this age of Kali, our attraction, our repulsion is all topsy-turvy. It has no proper harmony. We are fallen to the core. And when we realize this principle, then we can recognize the great mercy of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And very desperately accept the mercy of Sri Chaitanya Dev. Hare Krishna.